This is the Rich Eisen Show.
We're all in. We're all in.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
TJ, you're the Cowboy fan here?
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
The Rich Eisen Show.
As of now, no new contracts for Dak, CeeDee, or Micah. Micah at least is taking the pressure cooker off with him by him saying, I'll wait my turn.
Earlier on the show, Baseball Hall of Famer George Brett. Coming up, actor Billy Magnuson. Plus, what's more likely, latest news, and more. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
That's right. Hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air here on this final Friday of the month of July 2024. For those who are watching on the Roku channel and so much more, you can see that I am in my home office right now battling the vid. I've got the Rona. Saw that second dreaded line on my test yesterday after coming home from work. So fighting through hour number three, had a lot of fun in the first couple hours of this program with George Brett. A great conversation with the Baseball Hall of Famer in hour number one, and then hour number two, just chopping it up with you, what's more likely Friday. Chris Brockman and Mike Del Tufo holding down the fort right there in El Segundo, home of George Brett. TJ Jefferson is on the East Coast right now. Has anybody heard from him? There he is. This is an empty chair, which is not a metaphor for anything. That is not a metaphor for
anything. Should we ask him? Let me text him to see. Hey, did you make it?
Just hit him up.
Hey,
hit him up.
Did you make it?
If you missed anything over the first couple of hours, don't worry. We've got our podcast version of this show, all 3 hours, available any way you get your podcast through the Cumulus Podcast Network. Also, there's our YouTube channel that is closing in on 800,000 subscribers, and we greatly appreciate that, or followers, or however you want to call it. There is also Channel 210 on Roku, and it re-airs over and over and over again on Channel 210. If I'm not mistaken, on Channel 210, coming up at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on Monday, is that not the debut of the Good Morning Football overtime on Channel 210?
Good Morning Football is back on Monday.
Yeah.
That is right.
First two hours on NFL Network, the next two here on Roku.
On Roku and other affiliates across the country as well. So,
buddy.
Good Morning Football is coming back, people.
Love it. That's
love good, love it. News right there.
Rich, Mike McCarthy is speaking right now.
Oh, yeah.
What's he saying?
So,
what's he saying?
I haven't seen anything. I just saw the old Twitter alert that he's alive. So
he's alive.
We'll get some of that and play it later.
Here's I don't think there's anything that he's only going to talk about the guys who were there. Right. And he's already in his press conference yesterday that the Joneses spoke. He spoke too about the fact that he's in the pressure cooker with everybody else, that he's got, he's got to sell stuff in the locker room without, any contractual backstop for himself too. So, man, I'm telling you, at some point I'll make a top five list prior to the season about top five season-long storyline arcs.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's the way we always talk about narratives and storylines in the NFL. Some are week to week, and some last the entire season. You already know what number one's going to be. It's can the Chiefs three-peat? But again, the storyline arc of one of the storyline arcs of the season is the way that the Jones family reacted to getting one and done by the Packers. That's just that simple. But hey, listen, if McCarthy says something, you let me know and I'll throw to that soundbite from my home desk. How does that sound?
You got it.
Okay. Jeff in Detroit is on the line. That's what I mean. He's my human Paxlovid. What's up, Jeff? What's going on?
What's going on, man? The whole crew spread it out all over the place.
I said, man, and spreading.
Put it together, though.
Oh, yeah.
You make it happen.
Hold it down, Jeff.
You make it happen.
That's what we're doing. We got
to
do it.
Calling in, first of all. Happy belated birthday to Chris and TJ, wherever he is. Second of all, appreciate you rallying, Unc. I see you getting it together and giving us information from the conference of your home.
Yes, indeed.
I wanted to talk about the WNBA versus the NBA. Now, I didn't get a chance to really talk after the All-Star game last week. Mm-hmm. Do you ever remember the WNBA outshining the NBA All-Star Weekend? I can. And this is a perfect time for women's basketball. If you were the commissioner of the WNBA, is there anything that you would institute to grow the game? Because it seems like it's right at that point where it's about to explode.
I don't know. Find more Caitlin Clarks and in Angel Reese's, you know, right? Isn't Paige Beckers is coming? She's coming down the pike, right?
She's
just keep. I don't know. In the same way that the NFL is a beneficiary of a pipeline of famous and famously good athletes at the collegiate level, I think that's what's happening right now in the women's game. But I don't know. You know, what you noticed, Jeff, what I noticed, what everybody noticed as well, is the WNBA All-Star, you know, game and team, like, they wanted to win. They wanted to win.
Yeah.
They wanted to beat – it was an actual competition.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And
it wasn't like, let's go hang out.
Like that. Yeah.
Let's go hang out, and we don't care if we're down by 35. Whatever. You know? And so,
gotta love the fact that Hulkamania is running wild here in Michigan. He popped up at one of our training camps. Hogan popped up at the Detroit Lions training camp. Gotta love.
Yeah. If TJ was here, they would we would show the promo, I guess, that he cut with Dan Campbell. I saw that this morning. Thanks for the call, Jeff. I mean, am I wrong?
Yeah, Rich. Back to the WNBA.
They wanted to win. They wanted to win.
Totally.
And meanwhile, the NBA All-Star game caused the commissioner of the NBA to, you know, you've got the drop right there. I mean, like,
well,
this is it.
Congratulations.
You know what I mean? Like, it absolutely spoke volumes. Like, I mean, do I say congratulations after that?
Right.
Holy heck of a competition mess.
I think what's super cool is the amount of talent that's coming into the league now. You know, there was a legit debate about whether Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese should be on the Olympic team, and that just speaks to the number of players that they have.
Yes.
They have more than enough to fill the team, and they are going to expand the league. We got San Francisco is going to be the 13th team next year. They want to get the commissioner, Kathy Engelbert, wants to get a 14th team by 2026 and to get to 16 teams by 28. So the league is expanding, which is awesome, and that just speaks to the amount of talent that's now coming up through and is going to be available now for the league.
Yeah, and the arenas are expanding as well, or at least the arenas that they're playing in. They're going to ones that can accommodate the crowds.
Absolutely.
You know, but again, this is why, you know, I have enjoyed watching the women's Final Four over the men's Final Four the last couple of years. The competition's better. I mean, obviously, it doesn't help that UConn is mopping the floor with the men's division.
And it's just familiarity.
Right?
Like, we know a lot of the women more than we do the men in college because they're sticking around 2-3 years.
It is personal when LSU and South Carolina were playing and Iowa and going against everyone else with Caitlin Clark. And you're also seeing in the WNBA All-Star versus the women's national team. I mean, they're guarding, they're picking up Caitlin Clark, 94 feet. Yeah. Like, this thing means a ton. And so that speaks volumes to fans, and fans will flock to it. It's just that simple.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's just that simple. Okay, Christopher, you have a news update?
Oh,
a
news update. Let's go.
Yeah.
Hit it. Play
Let's
my
go
music.
For it. Hit it.
And now, with a report of the day's news from the world of sports and entertainment, someone who is not a journalist or newsman by any definition of the word whatsoever, it's Chris Brockman.
I mean, that open is great, even though it's disrespectful. Rich, not sure if you saw this, the Baltimore Ravens tweeted out MVP Lamar Jackson remains sidelined with an illness, not practicing today, continues to undergo further evaluation and receive care from our medical team. That is from the Ravens.
Yeah,
official
I hope he's all right.
Twitter.
What is going on with him?
Do not
if
know.
If only he could do what I did, which is Zoom from home and resume your duties. You can't, you know, you can't do 11-on-11 through Zoom, you know? So
he was out there one time this week, but, you know, was limited and then not out there again today. So
I don't know. Again, like I said,
something or nothing for you? I mean,
right now it's nothing.
Okay.
Right now, it's nothing. I'm sure it's something to Lamar, unfortunately. But clearly, it's not anything contractual related or anything like that, which is what normally would be the implication of anything that's going on in training camp and somebody's not showing up. So clearly, that's not it. The only question is how does it affect opening night? And will we be talking about it opening night? That's the way I always viewed the Aaron Rodgers unexcused absence of June and the mandatory minicamp. Will it matter on the first Monday night of the NFL season? My answer to that is no. And right now it's just something to talk about. But nothing, hopefully, for Lamar that could last much longer. But obviously, if he starts missing, August training camp days,
right,
and doesn't appear in any, like if his first appearance on a field is the first night in Kansas City, now you're talking. But I don't think we're even on the edge of that universe just yet, right now.
Yeah, I agree. Let's stick in the north real quick. Just saw this tweet from Mary Kay Cabot. Wanted to put it out there. You talked about Nick Chubb as your top five comeback player of the year players.
Yep.
Obviously, coming back from that devastating knee injury from last season, she said, "Just watch Nick Chubb running full sprints after practice, cutting with tremendous agility. It was remarkable. We weren't allowed to film it, but Jimmy Haslam, Browns owner, watched the whole thing and looked very pleased." So we saw the video, awesome. What was it, last week, 2 weeks ago, of him squatting like 8,000 pounds, it seemed like. Feels like Nick Chubb is all the way back.
Let's go.
That's awesome.
Let's go. Great news.
Great news.
And that's what more needs to be said, other than the fact that if this guy comes back, not only is it something that he deserves, but I'm sure earned with hard work and blood, sweat, tears that we were not privy to. And what we saw last year from their running game without him will only serve to make them stronger down the depth chart this year and maybe ease him in back sooner and early. But we all know, Chris, what it's about. We all know it's about Deshaun Watson.
Yep.
And 100%. Can the Watson that caused the Browns to acquire him despite his off-field baggage and giving him the guaranteed contract that apparently was necessary to get him to change whatever other plans he may have had when he was up for grabs and other teams were interested in him and wind up in Cleveland. Can that Deshaun Watson show up and show out? He did, I would say, in Baltimore last year when he balled out in that win the Cleveland Browns had in Baltimore that shocked a lot of people just A, by happening, and then B, the news happened to, you know, began to seep out afterwards. Oh, yeah. He suffered a significant shoulder injury that is going to cause him to miss the rest of the season. It's just like, wait a minute, that guy who is running and throwing and was the typical quintessential Deshaun Watson, that guy, the one I will never forget the first Thursday night game of his career. It was the first game of his career, if I'm not mistaken, his first start of his career. And for the Houston Texans, and we were in Cincinnati, and the Texans were starting him, even though Bill O'Brien started him. If I'm not mistaken, Chris, you want to look this up? I shouldn't be trying to jog my memory when I'm a little bit COVID hazy right now, but if I'm not mistaken, Tom Savage started the year for the Texans for some reason, and then Deshaun Watson started the next game, which was a Thursday night football game in Cincinnati, and they had no tight ends, and they didn't have any I think some tight ends were playing tackle or something.
Didn't
crazy.
He have like a 60-yard touchdown run or something?
And then he ran one in from midfield.
Yeah,
he was having trouble, you know, operating the offense as one would think a rookie would do. You know, in a short week and not having a banged up offense up front in front of him, but he ran one in from midfield.
Yeah, he had a 49-yard touchdown run.
It was breathtaking. Yep. We were sitting there on Thursday night on NFL Network.
Who is this guy?
Exactly. Well, I mean, it was just like, that's the kid.
Yep.
That's the kid. And at the time, for real, people were like, why would the Chiefs not trade up to take him and take the kid from Texas Tech at the time? I'm telling you, at that point in time in life, people were like, why would the Chiefs? Because this is the guy I would think that Reed would want to have. Like, this is a guy that has a McNabb type game. He went with a guy who has a Favre-type game and a McNabb-type game together. But long story short here is it's about Deshaun Watson and can he return to form. And they wisely got Amari Cooper situated contractually to his satisfaction. And if the Njoku that was balling out with you know, comeback player of the year, Joe Flacco, shows up this year and Nick Chubb can do what he can do. Sky's the limit for Cleveland, 100%. Division winner, going deep in the playoffs. If Watson shows up like that, Myles Garrett is grim reaping and crossover dribbling and all that. No doubt for me. It's possible.
All right, Rich, last news item before we get to our next guest. Charles Barkley has been everywhere. We saw the news that Amazon is going to get the NBA rights, a massive deal with the NBA. Charles Barkley put out a statement on his Instagram this morning. Clearly, the NBA has wanted to break up with us from the beginning. I'm not sure TNT ever had a chance. TNT matched the money, but the league knows Amazon and these tech companies are the only ones willing to pay for the rights. When they double in the future, the NBA didn't want to piss them off. Charles goes on, it's a sad day when owners and commissioners choose money over the fans. It just sucks. I just want to thank everyone who's been at Turner for the last 24 years. They're the best people and the most talented, and they deserve better. I also want to thank the NBA and its fans, the best fans in sports. We're going to give you everything we have next season. Charles was also on with DP today and said that he has already spoke to all three networks.
Yeah, makes sense.
And Warner Brothers Discovery filed a lawsuit against the NBA today, alleging that the league breached his contract by declining the matching offer. So
this thing is potentially not over.
Yes.
You know, my opinion and just talking to people in our industry, Chris, because I'll include you in this, even though you're an actor, you know, is this is not completely over, that if there is some sort of, you know, lawyering that happens successfully on behalf of Warner Brothers, you know, Discovery, it's possible some games do still wind up in the Turner column, but not enough, I would think, to merit keeping together and the amount of money it would to keep together inside the NBA. And I've mentioned many times before that despite how terrific inside the NBA is and generationally brilliant, if not all-time great it is, I'm sure Amazon wants to create their own way of doing things. And the same thing with NBC and the same thing with ESPN potentially reimagining what they're doing. So I mean, taking Barkley, if he wants to continue on right now, I know he said he was thinking of retiring. I can only imagine the amount of money that's being placed in front of him and how insane it is, because Charles is one of one. I mean, and everybody wants to have a Charles in any sport.
And he already has.
His
deal
NFL
with Turner right now is $210 million.
Right. So any NFL show would want to have somebody like Charles Barkley. You saw how ESPN was putting him on their set during the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yep.
Right. I mean, and so anytime Charles wants to talk sports, he can find a microphone if that's clearly what he wants to do. And you know, I just don't know if a deal can be made at all between Warner Brothers Discovery and the NBA now that there's a lawsuit. Once you start suing a league, there's really very difficult ways to come back together, one would think, especially since, you know, the rumor in our world is that the head of Warner Brothers Discovery kind of pissed off the NBA from jump. So there's all of that.
Yep.
So I don't know. Obviously, the idea of keeping inside the NBA together and just saying to NBC, hire everybody. But I think Ernie's still under contract to Turner. And I don't know if they would still do it in Atlanta. I don't know what the plans are on that front. But for sure, if there are no filters on inside the NBA next year, as Charles just opined on his Instagram, that's must-see television.
Yeah, totally. A few baseball items. We know the trade deadline is coming up. A couple of moves have already gone down. The Red Sox get back James Paxton, who had been
DFA'd. Big Maple's back, man.
Big Maple back from the Dodgers for a minor leaguer. Randy Arozarena happened last night, traded to Seattle. That's an interesting move, as the Mariners have kind of been leaking water there.
The Yankees have folded? Have the Yankees folded their franchise?
Not yet, Rich. They're talking about after this weekend.
There are discussions. The Phillies acquired Austin Hayes from the Orioles. Alex Cora got a 3-year extension north of $21 million for Boston. A lot of talk about him maybe going to the Dodgers or the Yankees because he was in a walk year. That's kind of interesting.
Just
throwing that out there.
Mazel tov to you.
And lastly, Shams saying that Russell Westbrook is indeed signing with the Denver Nuggets. Two years, $6.8 million.
What number team is this for him now?
Good question.
We need to find out the record number of teams played for by an NBA Hall of Famer.
What's the Hall of Famer? Great. Good question.
Somebody Carter, with an orange jacket
I'm guessing probably
in
has
Springfield. That's it? That's the record?
This will be team number six for Russell Westbrook.
All right. That's
not as many as you thought.
Okay.
Vince Carter. Let's see. Hold on. I'm Googling Vince Carter.
Oh, Vince played for more than six, I think.
Oh, yeah. Vince played for eight.
Okay. Well, there's still time for Russell.
He's only 35.
Hey, good news update,
hey, that's
sir.
The news.
We appreciate that. Billy Magnuson, who played the villain in the latest iteration of Roadhouse, and was also on a Boardwalk Empire show that I love to watch as well. He is starring and producing a new film called Who, debuted in last year's Venice Film Festival, that will be in theaters nationwide 1 week from today. Billy Magnuson next on this edition of The Rich Eisen Show.
It's kickoff time, and Believe Podcasts are here to get you ready for the season.
He wanted to change the culture, and he wanted me to be a part of that.
With Believe, you get immediate reactions, game previews, and expert analysis from all 32 teams, plus all of your favorite college teams.
He's just rare in just about everything he does.
Sideline to sideline, end zone to end zone.
This was good for everybody.
Just search Believe. That's B-L-E-A-V podcast, wherever you listen.
Billy Magnuson right here on the Rich Eisen Show, right here on the Roku channel. Our radio audience is now back right here. We just saw a clip of Coup available in theaters nationwide on Friday, August 2nd. Billy Magnuson is here, and you star in the movie, you produce it, and it's a film. And there again, I mentioned Peter Sarsgaard. What an excellent cast member that you have right here.
Oh, he's great. Billy. He's fantastic.
So let's quickly jump in and explain to the radio audience who might have missed that clip what this movie is all about.
So it's a satire set in 1918 during the Spanish influenza, and this upper scale family hires a wandering cook to come in. And he slowly unravels and takes down this other man's life. So it's a film about one man stealing another man's life and, like, who's right, who's wrong. And that's what I kind of love about film. Like, we made this film for a very small budget, independent, mm-hmm. with some wonderful people. And when you watch film nowadays, like, yes, there's entertainment and whatever, but I love watching film where it challenges you. It asks you really questions like, what would you do in this situation? Yes. How would you connect with these problems or hurdles and, like, overcome them? That's what I've always enjoyed with cinema.
Right.
Is like, oh, how can I see myself in that situation? How I would get out of it.
And it's just, again, it's an interesting concept. It's fascinating. Obviously, we having lived through a pandemic, and mm-hmm. and that's what the Spanish flu kind of was back in the day.
Well, it breaks down class. Like, honestly, like, class, or like even just the social system broke down during our quarantine and stuff like that. And you slowly realized, wait, what is the dynamic? What's the power dynamic in the world now? And like who's in charge? So, yeah, kind of ask those questions.
That's fantastic. And again, that's in theaters nationwide on Friday, August 2nd. Everybody check it out. And congrats again on your first film with your production company.
Yeah, well. To be a part of it with a whole other slew of people.
Fantastic.
Yeah, man.
So you're from Queens?
Originally born and bred Woodhaven, Queens, New York.
How long were you in Queens?
Till I was about 10. 10, moved down to Miami. We didn't really like Miami. We were driving back up to move back to New York, but we stopped in Cumming, Georgia. Have you ever been there?
I have not.
It's just this beautiful little, like, country town. Now it's like Forsyth County became, like, I think the second fastest growing county in the nation for a long time.
Okay.
But it's a beautiful life, live on a lake.
Well, I lived in Staten Island for the first 21 or 23 years of my life, and mm-hmm. a lot of people ask me where my New York accent went. So yours went to South Florida and then Georgia? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I was a little kid talking like this all the time, and then, like, I went down to Georgia, and they're like, look at this damn Yankee over here, and you're like, I dropped it when I was a little kid.
So they kind of beat it out of you?
A little bit, they did. But I appreciate the Southern living. It's just fantastic, slow down pace. I have a garden. That's all I do. That's all I do down there. Like growing up in New York and Queens, you don't have gardens.
Well,
you
except
know?
Madison Square, I guess. That might be the only one.
Let's go Rangers.
Did you go? Did you? Is that so? You still are a Ranger fan?
Oh, 100%. Until if we had Thrashers in Atlanta for a while, but then they left.
They did.
Yeah, that's sadly. But I think they were like talking about getting another team, hockey team down there on the north side.
So you're a Ranger fan.
Rangers fan. Okay. So sad about this last
close
cup.
Close. Yeah. Close.
But, close.
But yeah. But at least you lost to the team that won the cup.
Yeah, the Panthers. Yeah, it was disappointing. I love Mika. I love now I can't think of his Igor. Just like great team,
right?
Good spirit. Uh-huh. I love him.
Did you grow up going to Madison Square Garden?
Of course, actually, my father was actually a competitive fighter growing up. So like,
did he fight there?
He fought at the Garden. Yeah.
And then the Felt Forum next door.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
There's actually. We have a thing in our house. 5 years before I was born, on my birthday, it's like a photo of him with the hand raised, fighting in the garden. Crazy.
That is cool. My dad was a French teacher.
Oh, yeah. Nice. That's awesome.
And that's about
Vous parlez français?
It. Un petit peu. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Now we're done.
No, come on.
No, no, no,
come
no.
on.
No, a little bit. No, a little bit. I speak a little bit.
I like
no,
it.
I ultimately disappointed my father.
No, we all did.
With
no.
my with my inability to take down the French lessons as well as I possibly could.
I mean, if you could go over there, eat some good food, meet some beautiful women.
That's not a bad way to do it.
I mean, come on.
Billy Magnuson here on the Rich Eisen Show. Again, he's acting and executive producer of Coup, which is coming to a theater near you on Friday, August 2nd. This movie's a bit of a departure from Roadhouse.
Yeah.
Very
far.
One would say.
It was a different, like airport.
If I had told you when you were getting started in your career that you would be in Roadhouse, what would you have been, you know, in a remake of Roadhouse?
Yeah.
What would you have said to something like that?
Wow, that's crazy. Congrats, as a young version of myself. This whole thing of getting into the entertainment world was more the curiosity with discovering other viewpoints or perspectives of other people's lives. And that's the greatest gift I've kind of received through doing this kind of work is to take a gander at other people's perspective.
Right.
But to be in Roadhouse specifically, it's effing bad. Can you curse on this thing? Not really.
You know what?
It's pretty freaking cool. It was pretty cool.
You know what? You just be you, Billy Magnuson.
I'm not gonna
I don't want to put you in a box.
Yeah.
Now that was the Queens in you coming out, right?
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
It's really great. I mean, wonderful cast, wonderful production team. Conor McGregor, all my scenes were basically with him. It was
What was it like acting with Conor McGregor?
I mean, it is the Conor show. But as an actor, you always hope to work with people that are curious, want to learn, have excitement. He showed up every day fully prepared and ready. And I can only be grateful for the time I shared with him.
Really?
Yeah, I really enjoyed him. He knows how to party.
All right. I need to pry. How do we know he knows how to party?
I mean, we had premieres what are we doing right now? What's this called? PR?
Yeah, sure.
All those things.
Sure.
So you spend time with each other and you get to know each other and he's a fun guy.
So he'd come up, he'd bring
Irish.
He'd bring shots and stuff like that to you? Is that what you're saying?
He did give me a bottle of Proper 12 with my name on it and everything. And he would he's doing great with that.
You didn't crack that open, though, did you?
No, I'm keeping that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to keep that. Chill with that.
Conor McGregor gives you, spirits. You're not going to just wants some?
No, exactly.
Did he sign it?
Of course. Of course, it's really cool.
That's
he's a good guy.
Really
cool. I mean, for what I know, I can't speak for anything else, but I enjoyed the time I shared with him.
I mean, I guess if you're around Conor McGregor and he does not attempt to kick your ass, that's a pretty good start.
It was. I do have to say, there's scenes he had to fight me and punch me, and I'm always being Conor, just pull, right? You're gonna pull him, pull the punches.
And
he, the guy is so in tune with his body. He's a martial artist. He knows where his body's
are
in
you
space.
Serious? He never connected with you once?
No, never with me. There was definitely when he was doing other scenes with other bigger fight stunt guys. He connected here and there. But I know I wouldn't want to get that left. I wouldn't want to be by that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool that you get to, work with Conor McGregor. Mm-hmm. So when you said you're learning characters and things, what did you learn about Cato Kaelin?
Cato Kaelin?
Yes.
That
and the O.J. Simpson murder
case, that was American crime story. Gosh.
Dude, I go deep, brother.
I mean, you did go deep. That guy, you know, I think he was just kind of more hanging out. He was just hanging out.
That's what you learned, huh?
He might have been a day late finding out about the murders. I don't know.
You didn't meet him, huh?
No. For me, every time I've played a character that's alive or something like that, yes. I like to do almost objective research on them.
Yes.
Because if I get to know them, what if I like them or if I don't like them, does that affect how I see them objectively?
Right.
Does that make sense?
Of course.
So no, I did not meet him.
You did not meet him.
No.
But you just got the sense he likes to hang out.
Yeah, he's still around. He has a good time.
I could see that too.
Yeah. Wow, God, that's a deep cut.
Oh, I got another deep cut.
Oh, gosh.
I was a huge Boardwalk Empire fan.
Hey!
And I know you had a few, what was it, three episodes?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay.
I was a young guy.
How old were you when you did that?
Oh, man, maybe 25, 26.
Okay.
I was young.
And was it like being on the set of that?
I think that was cool. Again, you know, starting my career so young, or not so young, but
right.
For that to be one of the hottest shows on TV at the time and being a part of it was just like the greatest gift. But like, you know, just playing make-believe, having a good time.
Until you were drowned in a tub, spoiler
until
alert.
Until I was drowned in a tub on heroin, spoiler alert, you know. I can't remember much of it, but it was good. It was good. It has led me to getting things such as Roadhouse
sure.
and all that.
And now the opportunities that you get right now.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like, building the opportunities now are really important. As I've moved, you know, gotten older, it used to be ahead. Like, funny thing about our industry is it's like it's a very selfish thing, and you're always fighting for yourself. And once I started working with Happy Bad Bungalow, it's like you're trying to build a community. And that's what I've been craving more
sure.
than any. I think it's the same thing with your talk show, right? I mean, you built your community here and you have your boards and you get to know each other. And you like go through 10 years now. Congratulations
Thank you,
with
sir.
The show.
Thanks, Billy. Appreciate it.
But building that community is so important. And I've been craving it more and more as I've gotten older.
Well, I mean, we try to, you know, do our best here just hanging out.
I think you're doing okay. I think
Thanks,
you have
Billy.
A future.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah.
I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, but we're celebrating 10 years and you asked how we got to all know each other.
Fraternity, you said, right?
No.
No initiation? No, nothing like that?
No. We just all kind of got smashed together. I met Chris at NFL
Grindr.
Network years ago. Yeah.
That's right.
Yes, we've been in a, it's like a meat grinder every
day.
There
you go, there you
go. There's an E in the grinder. Yeah. That we met each other on. But yeah, I met Chris at NFL Network and TJ was part of this, the team that was put together here on DirecTV. And Jason Feller, sits in here all the time because the guy who helped start the show is rarely on it anymore.
Really?
Yeah. Do you ever have somebody that you work with and then all of a sudden they just don't show up for work and you have no idea why? Does that ever happen to you?
Well, you kind of have it. You probably have you know why. Do you know why?
They didn't show why up? He's not here?
Yeah.
Actually, I have no earthly idea. Do you know
really?
Where? Do we know?
Today, I don't know.
No, he's got another job.
Oh, there you
he's
go.
He's got another job, so I have no idea. He's from New Jersey.
Oh, that's why. That's why.
He's lost in the Garden State Parkway.
No, I love New Jersey. It's fantastic. We shot Coup in New Jersey.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you really?
Yeah, we shot it in Jersey. Yeah.
We're in Jersey.
I couldn't pick it off the top of my head right now. But it was about an hour outside the city.
Okay,
but
cool.
It is like Jersey offers such a great incentive for like a film like this. Again, yeah. A period piece, very small budget. It gives opportunity for a growing artist to like have a shot. Like you have movies like Roadhouse over $100 million.
Sure.
And what you're buying is time. And like with these smaller films, it's you have people that are passionate showing up.
Yeah, man. I mean, yeah. You know, in the there you are in the tuxedo, dressed like the Great Gatsby, man.
Yeah, I wish it was the Great Gatsby.
Who knows? But you know, we saw in the clip that you showed up. Were you wearing like a singlet, a one-piece suit or something like that?
I think those were the bathing suits at the time.
It
wasn't my job to do that research. So.
You know what? I think you should bring it back.
I will. I was a wrestler, actually, growing up. That's how
really?
I got into the acting thing.
How so?
I was wrestling 161, 170 at the time. It was like my junior year in high school. I was state semi, or not semi, it was like quarter or something like that, finals.
Right.
I was trying to do a leg ride. Guy ripped my hamstring. I couldn't take a gym class the next semester. And they threw me in a theater class. And then I kind of just fell in love with it.
Really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Very much so.
Got your muscle ripped off your bone.
It was the hammy, yeah.
Pretty much. And they're like, you know what? I think I should try acting.
It was fantastic. I'm just saying, you know, women are not in the men's locker room.
That's right. So, hey, man, and you are killing it right now. So congratulations on everything that's going on with you,
Thank
Billy.
Thank you, sir.
For sure. Everybody should check out Coup and theaters nationwide on Friday, August 2nd, and look out for more from you, Billy Magnuson. Thanks for being here, sir.
Hey, thank you for your time.
You got it. That's Billy Magnuson right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Everybody check out Coup when it comes out on Friday, August 2nd.
Whenever they have a shot of a head coach.
The cutaway.
The cutaway.
Mm-hmm.
We like to guess what that individual is like as a stepfather.
Brockman, who's up first? Who do we have up first here?
First up, Alabama head coach, Nick Saban.
Taking a look at Nick Saban.
Nick Saban is the kind of stepfather that, regardless of how different he may seem to you, in every single Christmas card photo, his hair has been the exact same since he married your mother. He's also the kind of stepfather that wears dress pants and then a white tank top undershirt all the time, unless he leaves the house and then he puts on the dress shirt.
Former 49er head coach, current Michigan head coach, Jim Harbaugh.
Be gentle here.
You'd be having a conversation with him.
Mm-hmm.
You think it's going really great.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just all of a sudden gets a look on his face and he goes, "What was that?" And your heart just goes into your throat and you think you've said something horribly wrong. And you instantly start thinking about all the things that you could possibly be getting in trouble for.
Do we have Tom Sula?
We have a bonus line.
Yeah, got Tom Sula?
I've got your current
Niner head coach?
He is the kind of guy that he will be having a conversation with you and he'll never be looking at you. And he'll be going, "How's your day? You got a good day?" And you start telling him how your day was. And then he'll always go, "Hey, honey, what's for dinner?" No matter what you're talking about, can we try? Yeah, you'd be bearing your soul. Yeah.
So hold on a minute. So I'll be your stepson.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Richie, how was the day?
That was great. Dad, let me tell you about what was going on.
Hey, honey, have you seen the clicker? Where's the clicker?
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. And the desk is furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Okay. Is Leon in Kentucky still on the phone line?
Let's
take him. What's up, Leon? How you been, sir?
Yes, sir. Rich, how are we? Fellas in the studio, how we doing?
What up? Leon. How you doing, brother?
What's going on?
Good. So as a lifelong Cowboys fan, you could call me disgruntled for many reasons.
Okay.
You know, the old Larry David disgruntled. The reason I'm disgruntled today, Rich, is I can't purchase that sweatshirt you're wearing. How can I get one of those?
Great question. Let's work on that. This was like a giveaway for Super Bowl a couple of years ago or this past year. Yeah. Let me work on that for you, Leon, and we'll let you know when you can get one of them because they're pretty cool. They fit well.
All right.
And they're great to throw on when you get COVID. So they're very COVID friendly. So
that's that love it. For me. Now, I'm not disgruntled with the Cowboys front office. I mean, you got Coach McCarthy. He gets some deserved heat, but he's all business. If you watched the press conference yesterday, he just wants to talk about ball. And Jerry is the king showman. All in this, all in that. He said ambiguity probably 50 times yesterday. He's all in on making the headlines. And he always has been. Lifelong Cowboys fan, you know this. T.J. Jefferson, if he was anywhere to be found, he would back me up there. You mentioned earlier top five season-long storylines. One of them's going to be the Cowboys, whether it's good or bad.
No doubt.
About Jerry,
no
about
doubt.
Dak, they're always included in that. So I think that's, I'm not disgruntled with the Cowboys front office. I'm used to it. That's,
so then
all in.
You're gruntled with them? Is that you're saying you're gruntled with them? What are you disgruntled about then, if you're gruntled with them?
No, I'm not disgruntled with the Cowboys front office. I've seen this trick before. Jerry's, the king showman. This happens every year. I am not disgruntled about the Cowboys. This is just part of it, being a fan. But top five season-long storylines, I mean, it is what it is. We're always in there.
Thanks for the call, Leon. Appreciate it. Listen, again,
the number of times that you will hear from them is that, hey, we want to make sure that the roster that we had last year gets its shot one more time this year, pretty much as is. And one of the reasons why we're doing it as is twofold. We got to pay Dak, we got to pay CD, and we got to pay Micah at some point. And we're not going to take our dollars and give it to free agents on the market to try and supplement the team that does have multiple Pro Bowlers and multiple All Pros on the team. And I'm sure some capologists would tell you, all you got to do is put some of the, you know, Dak and CD contracts on credit card, come up with something that might be more flexible right now, and go out and get some of that help onto your team, and go to work. But it does appear that Jerry prefers to tell everybody, we know we're good. We know that, you know, it's the place to be in the NFL, or at least we believe it is the place to be in the NFL in terms of attention paid, in terms of, you know, ability to make your money off the field because the spotlight's on you as a Dallas Cowboy. You like living in tax-free Texas. The Metroplex is a nice place to live. And we're just going to tell everybody, you want to stay here, you got to win this year and go for it. Again, that is the story of the year and how that's going to work.
Bingo.
And I'm just wondering, at some point, are we going to hear at some point, week four, week five, week six, if they're 3-3, you know, 4-2, but, you know, lucky to be 4-2, or week seven, week eight, they're, you know, 5-4, week nine. If that's the way it is, it'll be like, hey, it comes out of that locker room, that the pressures that everybody's been under from Mike McCarthy not having an extra year on his contract or any other years in his contract, or the all-in status, you know, it's not a great way for these players to operate under. Will we hear that? Like, that's it. I mean, I think I nailed it down to a nutshell, Chris.
I think you did. Yeah. I just think there's that. And then I just think Jerry talked about this particular person yesterday. Bill Belichick is going to loom over this Cowboys season all year long, good and bad.
Well, I mean, not midseason. That just won't happen.
No, but if they're under 500, we're just going to talk about it. Like, oh, you know, McCarthy's going for his job this week, whatever. So
I can't imagine they're under 500.
I honestly can't either. I mean, I don't know.
Put their schedule up, if you don't mind, Mr. Hoskins and Don Bowie, back in the El Segundo studio with me sitting in my home office. I mean, you know,
They've got a semi-favorable start to the year. That game at Cleveland is tough, man.
Game at Cleveland is tough to start. And then they do have an early game against the Giants.
Yep.
And habitually they're good at that. New Orleans is a game that they can win. They're at home. And don't forget, at home last year, they were dynamite. Baltimore's a rough one. So let's just say they start 2-2 somehow, right?
Yeah.
And they go to Pittsburgh 2-2. Home for Detroit is just going to be a fun game. Let's say they're 3-3 going into the bye.
Oh, I was going to say worst case scenario. Let's worst case it. 2-4 going into the bye. Oh, does McCarthy get got?
To San Francisco and Atlanta?
Ooh, and Mike Zimmer takes over for the rest of the year. Bill comes in.
Because McCarthy's installing the offense. The offense is him. And it's never really that it's, I don't think they're going to have a problem scoring.
But what if they do and they're 2-4? That's all I'm saying.
I still don't think 2-4 going to the bye is going to. Jerry doesn't make these moves, man.
Yeah, but Jerry did admit the reason why McCarthy didn't get an extension is because they lost the playoffs.
San Francisco. So if they're 3-3 coming out of the bye, going to San Francisco at San Francisco on Sunday Night Football, it's just going to be lit. Oh. At Atlanta, home for Philly, home for Houston. Good Lord, that ain't easy.
Five really, really tough.
Like if Atlanta's blown the doors off and they're scoring 35 a game, and suddenly the Cowboys are 3-4 going to Atlanta week nine.
Well, yeah. We started the show talking about Dak and his response to all of the contractual talk that he loves being there. But hey, if he's not, that's what a lot of other all-time great quarterbacks have to deal with, not playing for the same franchise throughout their entire career. Mike McCarthy talked about Dak today.
Definitely, I mean, Dak's the same individual every day. He's the most consistent, really. Co-worker that I think I've ever gone with. I mean, he's you know, he has such a good process. It's been exciting to watch the growth and the gifts in his personal life, and just the joy that he expresses on that on a daily basis. So yeah, he's this guy. He never blinks. I've never seen him blink.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I mean,
of course he's going to talk his guy.
Yeah,
out.
Yeah. You gotta.
Hey, and again, that's what I heard from Dak before. Is he's lamenting that he's got to have these conversations because he just wants to be all in. But that said, I mean, the guy's making $50 million this year, and that's why he's basically saying next year I'll make 60 somewhere else if I have to.
Yep.
Phew.
You know,
and there will be a list of teams like, ready to sign him.
Like I said, the storyline all year for the Dallas Cowboys is how will they handle this pressure that the Joneses concept of all in places upon them, all of them. And again, it's how the Joneses handle the playoff loss to Green Bay. And McCarthy was asked about that on his behalf.
Well, I think it's like anything. I mean, when you go through, you know, the loss at the end of the year, and there's only one team that doesn't have that feeling, you know, in the playoff tournament, there's always a tremendous level of disappointment. And then obviously ours was higher in the area of frustration because of the way we played. But, you know, that's frankly is what the offseason's for. And, you know, and it takes a while. And I think I can clearly state that losing that game for me personally was not easy. So I get it. Now I get the fans' frustration, but we're past that. That was part of our cut ups. I mean, our guys have seen that game over and over and over again, as far as the way it's, you know, the situation breakdowns that we have, and I'm sure they'll see it through, you know, certain points of training camp. Because at the end of the day, every time you line up, you know, win or lose, it's a learning experience in this league.
Now, I understand that they've already moved on from it. They've seen the cut-ups and everything like that. But the roster, the way that it is constructed, and everybody else, you know, either waiting for a new deal or wondering if a new deal is coming, or whatever happens with Dak and CD and Micah Parsons, that is lasting from the loss. And again, how it all plays. The concept you hear all the time is you got to give a coach extra years. You can't let him coach his final year by him, you know, without any extra years down the road, because it's difficult to sell anything in a locker room if somebody's like, yeah, right, you won't be here next year. I got a 5-year contract, so go F off. I'll do it the way I want to.
Mm-hmm.
That's been the general sense in the 20-plus years that I've been around the NFL, what it is, and so it'll be a testament to Mike McCarthy's style and ability to sell stuff and get it bought in a locker room. But, you know, they could move on as a team from the loss, but as a franchise, they haven't. Now, to wrap up this show, I want to thank, obviously, George Brett and Billy Magnuson for doing it, and everybody there.
Good job, Rich.
Bearing with me while I do everything here from home. Back Monday, we'll find out if I'm here or back in the studio, but I'll be there. I'll be there. And you enjoy the weekend, everybody. Thanks, guys. Greatly appreciate it. We'll wrap everything up on the Roku channel when we come back, but for everybody else, we'll chat on the radio next week.
April Rose here, model, actress, radio host, and content creator. But the thing I love the most, the sound of a fast car and those high revving engines, the beautiful music they put out. But of course, I dread the sound of cars crashing. I mean, you know that pedal all the way to the right, the one that turns your car into literally a rocket? Yeah, that one. Well, let's pump the brakes on that need for speed. Guys, you know speeding's illegal, but did you know it accounts for more than a quarter of all traffic-related fatalities? Speeding puts you, your loved ones, and everyone else on the road in danger. When you drive over the speed limit, even by a little bit, you can do damage that's beyond repair. I mean, the result could be costly property damage, a totaled vehicle, increased insurance premiums, or even worse, serious injury or a deadly crash. So slow it down. The sound of a fast car might seem cool, but the sounds of sirens and hospital machines simply are not. So next time you're tempted to floor it, think about the consequences. Ultimately, speeding catches up with you. Drive safe, friends. Paid for by NHTSA.